Morning, everybody. Welcome to the One Day at a Time Long-Term Abstinence Workshop. My name is Suzanne, and I am the leader for this workshop. I'm going to turn this over to Michelle. We're going to start with a serenity prayer and an announcement.
Hi, I'm Michelle, compulsive overeater and bulimic. Hi. Will everyone join me with the serenity prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, thank you. Today this session is being taped. If you choose to participate in any discussion in this session, you must sign this form granting Compulsive Eaters Anonymous how specific rights in taping your voice.
Okay, and also, if there are any questions, you have to come up to the front of the room and use the microphone, and there will be a question and answer session after the speakers. I'd like to tell you a little bit quickly what this workshop is so that you're interested. This workshop is about long-term abstinence. It's one day at a time. Some of us were struck abstinent when we walked through the doors, and some of us struggled for years. I have 9 years, and I got struck abstinent, but I'm not at goal weight, which is very, very rare. So I am I'm an odd bird, to say the least. Leanne has 21 years of abstinence. Marilyn has at least 15. Gabby has 14, and Linda has almost 7. And we're going to talk about, this is not a meditation workshop. This is not a seven tools workshop. But we're going to talk about how we got here, but mostly how we got abstinent, but how we stay abstinent, and how we utilize maybe one or two of the tools. And we're going to be incorporating that in the workshop. We're going to be doing a couple of fun things. So this workshop is for you. Please stay. I think there's something for everybody. And I'm now going to turn this over to Leanne. Leanne is our first speaker. Like I said, she has 21 years. She's the elder stateswoman of this workshop, and I think she has a lot to say. Also, one other thing. In this workshop, if you can, please no applause. One of my people has a concussion, so if you could just... And no, snapping would not do either. And it's okay. If you like the workshop, you can tell me afterwards, because someone said, I'll know. And if anybody's a Spanish speaker, I speak fluent Spanish, see me after the workshop also, if you want any more information. So please, no applause. You can pretend you're clapping. The ladies will see it, and I'll know. If you don't like the workshop, you can tell me also. Okay, so this is Leanne.
Thank you. I'm Leanne. I'm a compulsive eater. And I hope that everyone got a bag when they came in or have received it, and if not, there are some in the back. We need them. Okay. And it's a pleasure to be here and to be able to give service. If we could turn the lights down just a little bit, it probably would help. We'll have a kind of a different meditation. Maybe it'll help you to learn different ways of doing meditation. No, that's fine. So, good morning, and each of you has been given a tiny cloth bag with two things in it. If you could, please open your bag now. I would appreciate it. And inside the bag is a tiny folded message and a small rock. The message is not important now and is something you can take home with you so that the bag and the rock are a memento of this workshop. Please take out the rock, place it in your open palm. Sit with both of your feet flat against the floor. Correct your posture by imagining that a cord extends from the top of your head to the ceiling directly above you by a pulley, and it is pulling more and more taut so that your spine elongates and your neck straightens. Now, for just a moment, close your eyes and correct your breathing. Breathe in slowly to a count of five. One, two, three, four, five. Then exhale just as slowly to the same count. Let's do this two more times, and while you do this, try and quiet the dialogue going on within your head. Breathe. 2, 3, 4, 5. Exhale. 2, 3, 4, 5. It's difficult for everyone to quiet their internal conversations, but do it the best that you can. Remember, you can never hear the message that your higher power and the universe at large is giving you if you never silence yourself. Okay, one last breathe. In, 2, 3, 4, 5. Exhale, 2, 3, 4, 5. If your eyes are not already closed, please do so now, because it will assist me while I send you on a little trip. I have placed you in a tiny capsule, just your size. It is a time machine, and as we speak, you are being sent back hundreds of years and soaring across the continents. As the capsule slows down, you find yourself in a coastal shipping village. The screen in front of you says England, 1497, and the capsule dissolves, leaving you breathing in fresh, crisp sea air, and standing on a creaking wood dock next to a building, flanked by two soldiers in dress uniform, standing at attention. This should remind you to check your posture and breathing, if it has been changed. It is now that you remember that inside that building, you have just signed a contract with an elaborately dressed man with a thick Italian accent. His name is Giovanni Caboto, but the English military has changed his name to John Cabot, and he is to be captain on a ship that you will shortly be boarding to a new world. Perhaps this contract is the promise that you made to yourself when you joined our program. You feel a bit of sadness for the life that you're leaving behind, and you realize that friends and family members might want the best for you, but this is a journey that you must face alone, and with the assistance of your crewmates. The journey of recovery starts out alone, but continues with support from brothers and sisters in the program, even when the best of intentions from family and friends fall short. It's only mere moments before you board the ship and are on your way, so to calm your nervous energy, you decide to take a walk along the rocky shore. Cool mist from crashing waves against the rocks dampens your skin occasionally, as you imagine the huge adventure before you. As you wander, you glance down at the wet rocks you're walking on, and one suddenly catches your eye. You pick it up, place it in your palm. The water and tides have worn the rock smooth. You look at the coloring and shape to you, and it is special and beautiful. You place it in your pocket as a keepsake and a comforting piece of land that you're beginning to leave behind. Please open your eyes. Look at the rock that you are holding. The rock that is in the palm of your hand is a symbol of every individual. In what condition do I come to you? The colors are varied. The environment has molded and changed each one. Beaten it down, yes, but also polished and made it more beautiful. The rock is a symbol of simplicity, put to the test that life presents and made magnificent in every one of its different forms. Please close your eyes again. It is time to board the ship now. On the dock, you pick up a duffel bag that has been provided for you. Inside, it has everything you will need for your journey. You walk up the gently rolling gangplank and board a small wooden ship named Matthew that for the next few months will be your home. You stow your gear and report for duty. Your job as crew member is to man the crow's nest, to search the horizon for any marine dangers, inclement weather, and with your spyglass pointed to the horizon, search for land. Just like the sailor's duffel bag, the program provides us with all the tools we need for our journey. But unlike the responsibilities on a ship where everyone else's lives depends on you and whether or not you use your tools properly, the life you are saving by using the items provided to you is primarily your own. A great addition to everything that you're given is that as you gain success with your program, you can then use these tools to assist others. And as with the sailor's spyglass, we all keep careful vigil for rough moments ahead, but with a steadfast focus on a future way off in the horizon. Filled with hope, the first few days of your journey are without event. You find yourself in a routine of days and nights, filled with hard work, but with a sense of satisfaction from what you've accomplished. You realize early on that this part of the journey is probably the hardest part. Learning a new job is difficult, and sometimes you fail at what you are doing and try again and again. Late one afternoon, you are on duty in the crow's nest, scanning the horizon. Off in the distance, you see dark clouds building on the horizon. You send another sailor to notify the captain and crew so that they can prepare for what may be coming. Within minutes, the wind picks up, the crew struggles to bring the sails down so that they aren't ripped from their moorings, and with a flash of lightning and a huge boom of thunder, the storm is upon you. You struggle down from the crow's nest, grasp one of the ropes whipping about in the wind and rain. You knot the rope securely around your waist and tie the other end to the main mast with several knots, while other members of the crew do the same and call out to each other over the storm. The next several hours are terrifying. The ship is tossed like a toy amidst huge waves, sending you across the deck. The rope cuts into your skin as you're tossed about, and you find yourself grateful for the knife you have in your pocket, in case you need to cut yourself free from the ship if it begins to sink. Slowly, the storm begins to ease. Drenched and shivering, you free yourself from the rope and crawl below deck, where you find a dry blanket that you wrap around yourself, and exhausted, fall into a deep sleep. In minutes, you are awakened by a crewmate, checking on you, and shrug off your sleepiness to help everyone clean up the mess, repair what might be broken. As you come out of the ship's hold, you are amazed by what you see. The dark ocean waters are completely calm, and across the clear night sky, all you can see are millions and millions of stars. Starting off in the program is oftentimes the most difficult part. There is such a huge learning curve that sometimes you find you need to try the same task again and again until you get it right. The blessing of those early times is the huge sense of satisfaction that you get from each success. But even the most experienced and successful of Sea Howl people will come across stormy seas, terrifying adversity. There may even be times where you think seriously of cutting yourself free rather than leave yourself to man and your own sinking ship. But everyone who has experienced these moments and powered through it know that eventually the turbulence will end, the clouds will clear, and you will be blessed with an amazing clarity that you never had before, by living successfully through the adversity. The rest of your journey across the Atlantic Sea is relatively uneventful. You gain a camaraderie with your crewmates based mainly on the ebb and flow of your daily lives and the chores you attend to while living them. One morning while on duty scanning the horizon with your spyglass, you see a dark spot way off in the distance. You call down to your crewmates and the captain changes course slightly to head in that direction. As you get closer, one spot becomes two, then three, and more. It is a chain of islands, behind which is a huge landmass. You don't know it, but you have arrived at what one day will be named Nova Scotia. You find yourself completely enamored with this new world and are struck by its beauty. The choice you can make is to continue on as a member of the crew of the ship Matthew, or stay on this beautiful island with a few survivors and colonize in the name of the King of England. The choice turns out to be an easy one. A whole new world stands before you, rife with possibilities. You possess the tools, skill, and self-awareness to not only successfully survive, but to thrive. The program provides us with a whole new world to immerse ourselves in and flourish with physical, spiritual, and emotional growth. We build this foundation with compatriots who help us as we help them with the building of this infrastructure. You bid a fond farewell to a shipmate that are continuing on their own journey, and with a few friends that will be staying and working with you, you stand on a windswept, rocky shore, watching the ship sail off down the coast until a tiny speck is lost on the horizon. Now, please open your eyes. If you haven't already, you can put your special rock back into its bag. Thank you for allowing me to share this non-traditional meditation with you. I appreciate you allowing me to take you on this journey. And I will turn it over now to Marilyn.
Thank you. That was so wonderful. I just felt like I was really right there. I today live in the moment. I want to tell you a little bit about myself in 10 minutes. I'm going to try to tell you about my journey. I came into the 12-step program 38 years ago, and I had two small children and a four-month-old baby. I had no idea the rocky waters I was going to be through, and also the joy and happiness. I am so glad that I was able to stay. And part of my journey, I want to share as much with you how I got into recovery from being in relapse. As far back as I can remember, I was always a compulsive eater. As a little child, I remember wearing size 6X, and that was like the Lane Bryant of children. And I was also very tall, so I was bigger than all my classmates, and that sort of set me apart right from the get-go. It seems to me I have always been on a diet, and until I got into the program, I would gain and lose weight and gain it back as rapidly as I would lose it. Coming into program, the first speaker that I ever heard, I identified with totally. And I had a run for my money for a long period of time until something traumatic came along. And then the only thing that I knew how to do was to go back to overeating, because that acted as a tranquilizer. And after going back to overeating and having a period of abstinence, I realized the difference. There is a huge difference. I really have come to realize that what we have is a brain disorder, and it is just as deadly as taking heroin or any other form of drug, because the sugar and flour act that way on me. And the tool that I'm going to talk about is service. And I learned early on that when all else fails, working with another newcomer or another compulsive eater is the best insurance of being abstinent yourself. But it all begins with service at a smaller level in our groups. I remember when I came into CEA Howe, and the first meeting I attended was in Santa Monica, and it was overwhelming. There were like 200 people, and I have to get to know you before I can really warm up to you, or so it used to be. And my sponsor suggested that I take the position of greeter. You didn't need any time. And all these people came and they hugged me. And, you know, at the beginning it was overwhelming. And then I got to realize I'm one of you. We all have the same common problem, and I started feeling comfortable in my own skin. And, you know, years later, I got a position working for the head rabbi at Sinai Temple, and they have a congregation of 2,000 people. And everyone, it seemed, had to go through me to get to the head rabbi. And look at that little position of being Greta totally made me ready for what was to come, as the 12 steps have done to my life. What I realize is that none of us are perfect. However, the spiritual principles have to be perfect. The Ten Commandments we can live by. We want God to help us, but we have to do the footwork on our part. And if we're lying, or we're gossiping, or we're stealing, or we're doing any of those things we shouldn't be doing, we can't have God's grace. However, when we start to be the best person that we know how to be, it's amazing how the relationship between God and us intensifies. I must tell you that God is my best relationship. He never goes away. He's only one thought away, and it is very comforting. I wish that I had got the program when I was younger, but the truth of the matter is I'm a senior now, and how wonderful it is to have such a full, rich life today with so many blessings that have nothing to do with material things. I am not jaded. I look forward to things. I have energy, more energy than in my 20s when I was binging. I can't tell you what this program has done for me on every level. It has totally transformed my life. It doesn't mean that on the outside everything is perfect. It means that I'm changing from the inside out. I get up in the morning and I'm very anxious to do God's will. I sponsor 6 women. It never intended to be that way. And, you know, I never had such... They're all a different flavor. I don't know how else to explain it. But I so look forward to my ladies. I love each and every one of them. And there's a special bond there. Meetings, I can't tell you. Meetings are my medicine. The phone calls, the connections with people. I mean, you are my people. This is where I learn to live, and then I take it outside. I go to school. I'm involved in classes. I keep active. I walk in the morning. I look at the beauty outside, and I realize I live near a park. There are swans there. There are wildlife. There are flowers. I come from Boston, where in the winter we have to hibernate, and here everything grows all year round, and it's better than going to a museum and looking at paintings, because outside it's like a museum. The other day I'm looking out my window and I see the most gorgeous sunset, and I mean, I would never notice these things if I were overeating. When I was overeating, I would eat so much that I would go comatose and then wake up in the middle of the night and have to refill myself again. I can remember what we would call the lost weekend. I would get out of work on Friday, and I would eat my way up to Monday morning. And Monday morning, I couldn't find my keys. I couldn't find my shoes. I had 3 children to bring up. I was just so disorganized and chaotic, and that's not what my life is today. And I realized today taking care of myself is a full-time job. I read, I write, I call, I exercise. I love my life today. I love my life today because I'm abstinent. Abstinence is the most important thing in my life, without exception. I am so grateful to this program. I am so grateful for the wonderful friends I have made in this program. I'm grateful even for the people that when their defects are bothering me, I know that I have those defects too. And maybe not to such a degree, but this is like school. We learn so many things here, and we have to accept and love each other, because if we don't, there will be no program left. I don't know how my time is running, but it might be near the end, so I'm going to turn over to Gabby now and let her tell you her story. Thank you for letting me share with you this morning.
Good morning. Where are you, Evanga? Good morning. I'm Gabby, and I am a compulsive eater. And I'm very honored to be on this panel and also kind of stunned because the title of this panel is One Day at a Time to Long-Term Abstinence. And I have to tell you, thank you so much, Suzanne, for asking all of us to be on this panel. And thank you to Leanne for that. I saw half of us wiping our eyes at the end of that meditation. And thank you. Marilyn has been there since the day I walked into this room. I thought it was interesting. Marilyn talked about service and how important service is in these rooms. And we had a conference call a few days ago to discuss what we were going to talk about here. And absolutely the theme of this conference call was, it doesn't matter what you want us to talk about, we're just grateful to do service. You couldn't have had five people on the phone claiming this more fervently than to say, good, you want us to meditate, we'll meditate. Good, you want us to share about service, we'll share about service. You want us to, you know, you want us to dance and do the cha-cha, we'll do that. Whatever it takes to do service. So one of the things that we talked about is we'd like to take about 30 seconds. We'd all like for you, if you're comfortable, to turn to your neighbor. Doesn't matter if you know these people. Say, hi, I'm so-and-so. You can add, I'm a compulsive eater, if you're comfortable with that. If you're not comfortable with that, nobody's judging. And we'd like you to commit to the person next to you that you're going to take a service commitment at a meeting now. Those of you who are terrified, you could take a service commitment at a single meeting, one meeting, let's say in the next 30 days. You could say, I'm going to go to that Wednesday noon meeting, and I'm going to help set up chairs. I don't have to talk to anybody. I'm just going to help set up chairs. You could say, I'm going to call into the phone bridge, and I'm going to give my name and phone number, and I'm going to take down a name and phone number so I can make a call. Those of you who are a little bit more ready, you can say, I'm going to step up and take that open secretary position. My sponsor said, I got 6 months of abstinence. They said, who would like to be the intergroup rep? This is the Sunday morning meeting. It used to be at 26th in Wilshire. It's 5,000 people. They said, you know, who would like to be the intergroup rep? My sponsor, you know, elbowed me in the gut. She said, your hand goes up. I said, I don't know what intergroup. What are you talking about? I don't even know where Santa Fe Springs is. This is in the days before GPS. She said, doesn't matter. When somebody says, is there anybody who, your hand should be up before they finish the sentence. Because you do service. That's how you stay abstinent. So please think for a moment what you are willing to commit to in the next, like, 30 days. Take a service commitment, because I can tell you from having long-term abstinence that the only way you have long-term abstinence is to get to meetings, and Suzanne's going to talk about that. And you know how you get to meetings? Because you have something like the key. If you don't have the key, there's no meeting. Or the literature. I have to tell you, I can't begin to describe how many meetings I have not wanted to go to, but dang, I have the key. And then all of a sudden, it's the best meeting I went to, right? You know? So that's what they say. The meeting you most don't want to go to is the one you most need to go to, right? So please take 15, 30 seconds right now. Turn to the person next to you. Does if there's an odd number of people in the row, just turn to more than one, and say, I commit to, my name is so-and-so, I commit to. For those of you listening to this recording later, please make a service commitment to yourself out loud right now, to yourself and God. It can be one meeting that you're going to get to, and you're going to do some service right now. All right, you don't have to make that many service commitments, you guys. All right, wrap it up. And now think, I heard about five people look at each other and say, well, and I know what that means. Well, I want to make a... I know what it means when you say, well, it means I want to make a service commitment, but I'm scared. I want to make a service commitment, but I'm afraid if I take this and that. You know, it's like giving away all your fat clothes. You know, you get to this point and you think, I'm wearing a tent. You really, really need to get some new clothes. But you hold on to the tents in your closet. 95% of your closet is taken because your tents are huge, right? So you have, like, something in a smaller size, but just in case. You know what I did with my clothes? I gave them to other See How members so I could get them back if I needed them. Thank you, God, I didn't. So we said we were going to tell a little bit of our story. I know I don't have very much time, and I thank you for all being here. My story is different. Sometimes I feel shy, but as people say, it's the only story I have, so I don't know who else's story I think I'm going to tell. My story is that I came in and got struck abstinent. By the grace of God, if I stay abstinent today, tomorrow will be 14 years and 10 months. Now, let me say something very clearly. That was not my intention. So when you say, you know, one day at a time to long-term abstinence, it's as if, you know, I don't want you to think in any way, shape, or form that I have an answer for you. So let me give you somebody I was reading in a magazine the other day. Somebody said, you know, oh, Hollywood marriages end so quickly. How do you, you know, what have you done, sir, to, you know, keep your marriage going for so long? And he said, don't get divorced. So I have to tell you that how do I have such long-term abstinence? Because by the grace of God, I didn't eat. I wish that I could tell you something more concrete. I wish I could say, if you, you know, dance around the full moon three times and you call 17 people, including this one, and you commit to XYZ and you do this inventory exactly right, then you will not eat. And I wish I could tell you that, because I can't tell you how many people I've sponsored over the years, and they want it, and they're great people, and they have spirituality, and they have commitment, and they have commitments, and they slip anyway. And I want to say, like, okay, well, if you just do this, here's how you get long-term abstinence. And I don't have that answer, because I don't. After all these years in program, I'm not sure that answer exists. I'm not sure that there is a magic key except for working this program in all of its incarnations. So you'll notice today there's a workshop on the seven tools. You notice that we are talking about, you know, the other tool, the meditation. I'm talking about literature and writing. I continue to write every day. I happen to love writing, so it's really easy for me. It's like, oh, yeah, I'll speak about that tool. It's not a problem. I love to write. That's a very challenging tool for other people. Every one of these tools, there's something challenging. The advice I gave to somebody the other day, she said, I hate making outreach calls. I said, who are you calling? I said, why don't you find people you like to talk to? And why don't you not need, like, you don't need to call, hi, this is an outreach call. I'd like to talk about program. I said, do you not have a friend? You don't want to call and say, hey, what's up? You know, how was work yesterday? You know, it doesn't have to be like this onerous task, you know. Oh, I made my outreach calls, or I went to a meeting. You get to do these things. And are they easy? No. Am I still tempted? Yes. I wish I could explain that concept to you. It's not like you get 6 months of abstinence, or a year of abstinence, or 5 years. It's not like you have your ex-birthday, and you say, now I'm no longer tempted. Every single day, I think about compulsively eating. Not that it's white-knuckling it, but every single day, I know I belong here. In a way that I do not belong. Is that my time? In a way that I don't necessarily... my example is always, if somebody told you, you can't wear purple. So you'd look at them and you'd think, why not? But if they said, no, look, it's for your health, you're going to live years longer, you're going to be 10 times happier, you're going to look 100 times better, you're going to feel like spiritually your head is going to stop, only you'll stop wearing purple. You do it in a second. You said, oh, I have a favorite shirt that is purple, but it's all right. I'll let it go. It's not a problem. I can, I'll give it away. It's not a problem. As soon as somebody says, I'm sorry, you can't eat that, you know, I don't want to do that. Because I feel differently about food than I do about the color purple or any other thing, you know, because I'm a compulsive eater. I'm so stuck. I better turn ready. What do I do every day to maintain this? I don't know. I didn't come into this program to get long-term abstinent, but a couple of things helped me get through the beginning, and they've helped me all along the way. Number one is I walked into a meeting, and everybody looked normal. This is interesting in L.A., by the way, because in L.A., people look a lot really plastic most of the time. And so these were filled with men and women who looked healthy. They weren't scrawny. They weren't sitting there saying, oh, would you like to buy this diet powder or something? And, and as a science major, I knew what was healthy eating, and these people were eating healthy. So it wasn't like, oh, take these pills. I already know that, you know. Not that I won't do it. I've already done that part. But, you know, it was like these people looked healthy. Interesting side note, when I got to maintenance, everybody looked fat. I thought I should get thinner. I had to remind myself that when I walked in these rooms, I would have killed to look like these people. Maybe my head was a little screwed up. They hadn't changed, just my head. And I still think like that. I just have to point out, I said I shared this at an Encino meeting the other day. I bought a ring. I got it sized. It's size too small. I will not go back yet to get it resized because I'm convinced that if I just lose 5 more pounds, it'll fit. You understand I've been in maintenance for 12 and a half years, right? I've had 3 kids who have come back to this maintenance weight. A ring is going to fit if I just wait. I don't know what I'm thinking, but I am. What am I thinking? I'm thinking I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm thinking I belong in this meeting, and then maybe I'll get it resized tomorrow. That being said, and I'll just wrap this up, I can't emphasize enough that I didn't plan to have long-term abstinence. Actually, when I came in, a man spoke. He said, I lost 63 pounds in 61 days. I calculated it was September 29th, 1997. I said, great, by Thanksgiving, I'll be thin, I'll be done, I'll be out. And that's perfect, because it's Thanksgiving. As someone pointed out years later, Thanksgiving, you could, if it's so such an exciting holiday, go have everything you need from Thanksgiving. Go have it right now for lunch. You know, it's not like it's like a magical, you know, treat that you can only have once a year. It's not like it comes around. Okay. I was ready to go, but the things I told myself were, you're going to get 30 days in a row. You have to do this for this. Make a 30-day commitment. I know it's one day at a time, but that, you know, that telescope, set your sight on the land. Do it for 30 days. There is no food out there that will not still be around 29 days from now. That's a huge concept, because if somebody offers you something, you can say, I'll have it in like 29 days. Like, it's not never. It's just, I don't have to have it today because it's going to be here. I know we all feel like we live in, you know, God forbid the Sudan that, like, you know, is never, nobody ever eats ever again. But we have this. We have, so it was like, oh, I don't have to have that birthday thing. Why? Because it turns out I could go get it in 30 days again. And so I made that commitment, and I kept saying tomorrow can be day 8 or it can be day 1. What do you want to do? You're going to do this for 30 days. Good deal. And at the end of 30 days, I made one more commitment of 30 days. Before I weighed myself, I said, you know, I feel so much better. Let me just try this for one more set of 30 days. Again, it was one day at a time. Some moments now I white knuckle it. Some moments, most of the moments I don't. As one of my sponsees said, most of the time you find yourself, Sam, maybe it wasn't my sponsee, most of the time you find yourself sailing. You deal with the things that used to baffle you, you can now deal with. Plane trips? Nah. Doesn't even faze me in the slightest anymore. My first year, I was like, how do you say abstinent when you go on a vacation? By now, thank God, I've gotten, I know enough. That kind of stuff doesn't faze me anymore. But I want to really emphasize that the person with the most abstinence is the one who woke up the earliest this morning, which would probably be my roommate. And that's the idea here, is that we don't have a magic trick. You're looking at women who appear at the podium, who some of us were struck abstinent, some of us had abstinence, slipped, and came back long-term. I love that, you know, there are women here who have longer abstinence than I do up here, because it keeps telling me, hey, look, they made it through. You can make it through, too. And there is nothing different about me than you. I have you know, the highs and lows in my life. I have stressors and not stressors in my life. My abstinence is the most important thing above all. Why? Because if I lose my abstinence, I lose everything I have. I always think, oh, if I eat, this is the last thing I'll say. I always think if I eat, this will go away. This pain will go away, or this craziness will go away, or, you know, whatever it is, if I just eat. But I have to tell you two things. Number one is the food is no longer enough. If I'm going to go out, it's got to be like on major drugs because, you know, I have to eat a lot today. And the other thing is, do you know how well I multitask? I can eat and, you know, ruminate on whatever problem it is at the same time. Like, I am very capable of compulsively eating and still freaking out about whatever problem I have. Because I can do a lot of things. I mean, I multitask really well. So it's not that this is going to bring oblivion. So given that I have no solution or that my old solution doesn't work anymore, what can I do now to make, you know, to sail those waters and to have this? And that is the lesson I learned from the meditation, which brought tears to my eyes. I don't know about you, but, wiping away tears, which was, this too shall pass, this horrifying, horrifying storm. It's localized in my area, and if I just ride it out, it will pass, and I won't have given up my abstinence for it. There's no guarantees, but if I work the seven tools and I do all the things I'm supposed to, there's like one more instant where maybe I won't eat. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Linda, and I am a compulsive eater. And it is such a privilege to be here with you today. And thank you so much for asking me to be a part of this panel. I'm really honored. I'm the newcomer on this panel. I'll have 7 years in August, so I'm a baby still. But what I'm going to do is tell you a little bit about myself and a little bit about how what I do every day, every single day, to remain abstinent. And I'm going to talk about the tools of our food plan and of sponsorship. So I'll start out just telling you a little bit about myself. I came to this program when I was 58 years old. I'm going to be 70 in 2 weeks, so I've been here almost 12 years. And I have 7 years of abstinence, so you can see from that I wasn't a quick learner. So I'll tell you a little bit about what happened. I was born a compulsive eater. I was just wired that way. All of the thinking, the negative thinking, being fearful. I learned early on to use food to numb the feelings so I didn't have to deal with feelings. And that's how I went through most of my life. And, from the time I was born, my first memories, I just felt this deep hole inside, like there was just something missing that I was so starving for. And from the very beginning, I just started to think I could fill it with food. And then later on, I tried to fill it with all kinds of other things outside of myself. And at some point, I realized that part of that hole, part of what was missing, was a connection with God and spirituality. So I started in my late 20s meditating and going on a spiritual search. And I traveled the world. I went to sacred places all over the world. And I had gurus and shamans and some of the most incredible teachers that taught the truth. But guess what? I was in my disease. My mind was in chaos. I didn't know how to be still. I didn't know how to take in the teachings. I wasn't teachable because my disease was in full swing. At my highest weight, I was 260 pounds and very unhappy and desperate. And what finally brought me to this program, I was in a spiritual group, and two of the women from that group, we had gone out to lunch, and they had lost a lot of weight, and they just looked glowing, and they seemed so happy, and they were eating very strangely. So I asked them, you know, what it was that they were doing, and they told me about the CEA Hub program. It sounded wonderful, and I really felt I wanted what they had, But being me with no willpower, I was absolutely certain there was no way I could possibly do it. Because my experience with diets is not a happy story. I've tried them all. Some I've succeeded at for a short time, only to gain more weight back. And so I kind of forgot about it for a couple of months. And then a couple of months later, it was 2 days before my twin grandchildren were due to be born. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and there was this voice in my head. It was like God was speaking in my head and said, you have to go to that CEA HOW program, and you have to do it today because your little grandchildren are going to be born, and they're going to need you. And if you don't do this program, and you don't lose your weight, and you don't change how you're living, you're not going to be around. So as soon as it got late enough that morning, I called one of my friends who had told me about program, and she took me to my first meeting that night, and she became my first sponsor. And the first time around, I was struck abstinent. I remember sitting in my first meeting, and some woman that I'd never met held my hand as I just cried through the whole first meeting, because here I was with people that were just like me, that shared my same story. I had grown up with so much shame. You know, and I'd learned to lie and to try to cover up and to try to eat secretly, although my body certainly gave me away. You know, I really wasn't keeping a very good secret. And here were people that were just like me, that had gone through things so similar to me, and they understood. You know, and there I was at 260 pounds, and nobody was judging me. And everybody just reached out to me and was so friendly. And I received so much hope. And it was the first time ever that I really thought that there was hope that I might be able to change. And I already knew that it was more than the food. I wanted to lose the weight, and I wanted to be healthy because I wanted to be around for my grandkids. But I also knew that I had not been able to really take in all the spiritual teachings that I had sought for so many years because I was a closed system. I didn't know how to surrender. So when I came to this program, you know, I found a 12 steps that gave me structure. And I desperately needed structure, and I just desperately needed discipline. I remember a very, very dear person in our program who just passed away, who I love so much. I remember he used to always say, structure and discipline is not a punishment. And at the time, for me, I was so defiant, and I just couldn't listen to anybody. And the idea of structure and discipline seemed like prison. I had no idea that was the key to freedom. So I started this program. I lost my weight right away. I got through about 2 years, actually, but I never got through all of the steps. And when I look back, I see there were little places where I was holding out. And those holdouts are really tricky. And little by little, and people start telling me I was too thin, and that's all I needed to hear. And eventually I took that first bite. And guess what? You know, we think we're getting away with it because we can take that first bite and nothing happens, and we can go back to being, you know, to eating on our abstinent food plan, and we don't have a clue that we have put a crack in the dam. And over time, sometimes it takes a little time, sometimes it takes a long time, that crack gets wider and wider and wider until the whole dam cracks open and we're right back where we started. And what I had to learn, and I suppose I had to learn it the hard way because I've never been one to learn things the easy way, was that the first time around, being struck abstinent was absolutely a gift of God's grace. Getting and keeping abstinence the second time around took a lot of hard work. And there was a lot of struggle in between. There was a lot of slipping and sliding. I actually left the program for a couple of years because I was so ashamed. I didn't want anybody to know, you know, and I hadn't really dealt with all the shame I still felt inside and how I hadn't accepted that, yes, I am different from other people. I am a compulsive eater, and there's a way I have to live in order to live and in order to be free. So anyway, almost 7 years ago, I had just moved to the Valley, and I came back to the program, and I was really desperate. I'd put most of my weight back on, and I was just miserably unhappy and really down on myself. And I walked into my first meeting, and again, it was, I knew I was home. I really knew I was home. And the people that I heard speak said exactly what I needed to hear. And, you know, some of the other beautiful ladies in the panel had talked about service. And I remember at that first meeting, I was invited out to fellowship, and there was a man there that said, you know, just volunteer to be a greeter. And that's what I did, and I got to know people, you know. And I was so shy. I always used to sit in the back of the room at first, and I was afraid to talk to people, and that got me knowing people. And I'm going to just back up a little bit. Before I came back almost seven years ago, I was slipping and sliding for all those years in between. And when they tell you this is a progressive disease, I can attest to the fact that that is the truth, because trying to get the abstinence back once it's been lost was very, very difficult. So when I did come back, I resigned myself. I have got to give up defiance. I've got to work this program exactly as it's written, exactly as I'm told to do it. I have to use all of the tools. And first and foremost, you know, tools 1, 2, and 3, that process where we surrender our will to God and we put our life in God's hands. There's no doubt in my mind that on my own, I could not stay abstinent one day. There's no doubt that on my own, I could have a clear head, an open heart, make healthy choices, take right action, and live a life that's joyful and free. So today, that relationship is the most important relationship in my life, and abstinence is the most important thing to me in my life. And now I'm just going to take a couple of minutes and talk about the tools that I want to share about today. And the first one is the abstinent food plan. 3 meals a day, weighed and measured with nothing in between but diet soda, tea or coffee, or sugar-free gum. When I first started the food plan, my first time around, I remember standing and chopping my vegetables and cursing and being so pissed off that I had to do it. It just seemed like such a chore, and all the things that we were told we had to do seemed like so much work. But what I can tell you today is that's part of my spiritual work, because I used to think spirituality was something out there. You know, it was heaven out there. It was bliss out there. And what this program has taught me, and what the relationship I have with God today has taught me, is our spirituality is right here, where we stand, where we live, how we live. It's how we treat our body, how we treat each other. It's willing to care enough about other people to want to support them and help them have what we have and to learn how to keep it. So today, when I weigh and measure and I chop my vegetables or my fruit, it's a spiritual act, and I do it happily and I do it gratefully. And it's, to me now, every single thing in life is a gift of God's grace. And that's how I look at the world. And that's how I look at, and everything that we need to do at one time. And if any of you are still struggling, I mean, there was a time when it just seemed like so much that I had to do. And today, it's just what comes naturally. The first thing I do when I open my eyes is I pray and I meditate and I read and I write. and I call my sponsor. Then I go make my coffee. And then I get my calls from my sponsees. And then I make outreach calls. And, you know, just going through that process opens my heart so much, and I feel so much peace inside that it really takes me through the day. And many times during the day, I just stop, and it's thy will, not mine, be done. And I really am blessed with not having very many cravings today, but every once in a while. The other day, I stopped at the 99-cent store because they have cheap Sudoku puzzles, and that's my new addiction, is Sudoku. And I didn't know what aisle it was in, and I found myself walking down an aisle that had lots of sweet things that we're not allowed to have and that I'm not allowed to talk about. And I find myself, like, eyeing them and kind of looking. And I hadn't even looked at things like that for a long time. And some of them even look kind of appealing. And I know that happens to some of us some of the time. But you know what's different for me today? Because I use all of the tools, because I pray and meditate and ask God to take away my cravings and to give me strength and clarity and courage. You know, when I'm looking at these things and they're looking kind of good, there's another voice in my head. And it says, look at the life you have today. Look at the blessings in your life today. And look at what you would lose if you even thought about taking one bite of one of those things. And any idea of taking one bite disappears immediately. And so I really rely on that voice. And for those of you that might not have that voice in your head yet, make a call. Turn to God and ask for strength. Ask for the strength and the courage to resist temptation. Because, you know, I used to think doing everything we wanted, having everything we wanted when we wanted it, you know, being totally self-indulgent, I used to think that was freedom. And today I know that that is bondage. And the real freedom comes in living an abstinent life in recovery, surrender to God's will, and being a part of this amazing, beautiful fellowship. And the last thing I'm going to say, the other tool that I wanted to talk about was sponsorship. And I want to talk about both sides of sponsorship. One thing for me, being a sponsor is a sacred, sacred commitment and responsibility. And I love sponsoring. Sponsoring, like, you know, somebody talked about having service positions. For me, sponsoring keeps my commitment to stay abstinent and in recovery strong. Because I'm committed to those women that call me every day. I'm committed to be there at a certain time, and I'm committed to be there for them. And in order to be there for them, I have to be there for myself. So it is a very sacred, spiritual relationship. The other side of sponsorship that is so important is being a sponsee, because I also consider that a sacred commitment and a sacred trust. And I am committed to honoring the wonderful, amazing woman that sponsors me, that's there for me every day. And one of the things I know, and I learned it the hard way, is if you're calling your sponsor every day on time, and you're committing your food, and you're giving her your writing, it's so, so important that we're absolutely truthful with our sponsor. Because I got in trouble before as I started getting a little wiggly with the truth. So now I not only give my sponsor my food and my writing, but if I'm out of integrity in any way, even if it's just thoughts, you know, if I might not have even gossiped or said anything mean to anybody, but even if I'm thinking a judgmental thought, I talk to my sponsor about it. I tell on myself. Or if she hears me talking and I sound off in any way, boy, she straightens me out. And I made sure to pick a sponsor that I knew would do that, that would have the courage to be honest with me. And I have a great one, and I treasure her. And, you know, if we do this, if we do this program honestly, you know, and we live it like our life depends on it, because it does, then miracles are possible. And I witness these miracles all around me every single day. I witness them in my own life. And I wish for you the miracles that happen when you're abstinent in recovery. Thank you so much for letting me have the privilege of talking to you. Now I'm going to pass the microphone back to Suzanne.
All right, my turn. I am Suzanne, and I'm a very grateful compulsive eater. And I walked into the rooms 9 years ago on April 6, 2003, and I knew that I was not leaving without a sponsor. And the person that took me to the meeting did not know that I already had this attitude. I had already been in a 12-step program 5 years previously when I lived in another country, Mexico, in another program, which was great because that's where I got started. It was Overeaters Anonymous in Mexico, which is very much like our program here because they had a mandatory food plan. And if it said 4 ounces of a certain protein, you ate that certain protein, whether you liked it or not. So it even had more structure in some ways than our program. And then I did 5 years on my own, you know. I sponsored myself. Thank you very much. And I actually got very close to goal weight, you know. But then, you know, I met somebody, and he was another compulsive eater. But he would go the opposite direction. He would binge and then starve. And then he started becoming the diet police. And I went back to the food, you know. I don't have any regrets, but I mean, I probably wasn't ready for a relationship, but you know what? It's part of my experience, and I can't say I regret it. So when I walked into the rooms, I knew I cannot do this myself. I need a food plan. I need it to be mandatory. You have to do the food plan. And I knew that I needed a sponsor. And I went to this really large meeting in Santa Monica, California. Nobody stood up as a sponsor that day. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm getting a sponsor even if it's just for one day. One day, you know? So the lady said, I know who will sponsor you. So the woman came over and she said, I can sponsor you. And she may not remember this, but I said, you didn't stand up as an available sponsor. And she said, I was waiting for you. And that's how, you know, and she also said, my slot is open at, I don't remember if it was 6:15 or 6:30 a.m. It was not a question. It was, this is when you're going to call me. And I said yes, because I needed it. There is a debate, if you don't want it, you then you're not going to get it. But I have seen people who may, look, if you would tell me there was a way to have the clarity and still do sugar and flour and not be crazy, I'm there. Okay? So even though I knew that I needed the program, did I really want to give up sugar? No, but I was willing. I was willing because I knew I was desperate. I needed it. I think I was on the verge of another nervous breakdown. Well, in my mind, I was. And I wasn't at my heaviest weight. I'm 5'1", and at my heaviest weight, I was probably 210, 215. Okay, so that's a lot of weight on my little frame. So I walked in the rooms, and I got abstinent. But my abstinence has been different because about 5 years ago, 4.5 years ago, whatever it was, I had an emotional slip. And I'm going to talk about the meetings and the calls. You know, when I got abstinent, I had a small group of people that I outreached, and they would return my outreach calls. But I don't know what it is. This was just my experience. There'd be people I'd call, and there's this one person I'd call. I'm just leaving. I'll call you back. Well, after the sixth or seventh time, I thought, okay, you know. So I just had a small group of people that I call, and which is good. But when I got on the phone bridge, people, guess what? They call you back. and they take your call. And so if this is my suggestion, if you go to a face-to-face meeting, that's all you have, that's great. That is really great. I suggest, and I didn't know about the phone bridge meetings right away because my sponsor didn't know about them. She had no need. She went to face-to-face meetings. But for me, because I'm blind, doing the phone bridge meetings is a lot easier. I was caring for my mother also, and transportation can be a problem sometimes for me. And so if you need to enlarge your contact list, get on the phone bridge. You don't even have to get on the phone bridge. Just email phonebridgeoutreach@gmail.com, and they will send you 18 pages of numbers. And because if you're outreaching the same people all the time, let's say your meeting's only five people. That kind of can get, you know, complacent and tired. So expand your list. Here today, ask people for their numbers and call them. So here I was, working my program, I had this emotional slip. What I would do if I had to go out to a restaurant, I would excuse myself, I would go to the restroom and make a call. Sometimes I would say, I'm out, I need this outreach call. You know, and I have a really good friend who's not here today, but she also took me to a lot of meetings. She took me to some of the intergroup luncheons. I mean, you know, she's there for me so many ways. I would call, and I'm like, okay, I'm out with him. I need an outreach call. And she'll say, girl, you can do it. So we would talk each other through. Or I would call, sometimes I would just call somebody and not tell them I'm at a restaurant. I would just say, I need an outreach call. Share your experience, strength, and hope for today. So you don't always have to tell someone what situation you're in. Just make it. If you're out shopping, you know, I have a sponsee that will call me as she's going in. Sometimes I stay on the phone with her during the whole time she's shopping. You know, so the phone is like our lifeline. It really, really is. And so it's like if you're new, what do you say? Hi, my name is Suzanne. I'm new to the program, and I'm doing my outreach call. That's a great start. Can you ask, how are you? How are the kids? Yes, because we get to know each other. That's fine. Today's a bad day. I'm struggling. Please share something. What can you say to me? You know, also, we were going to do a little exercise. It didn't work out, but okay. I am going to suggest everybody get a little small notebook you can carry in your pocket. A lot of times I've gotten phone calls from people, oh, my God, my phone crashed. I've lost all my phone numbers. And so, I mean, that happened to me. My tape recorder flew across the room. The tape came out, slid under the stove, and literally broke. I swear to God, I think it was God telling me, Suzanne, get busy and learn how to use that computer. I haven't yet. It's on my list to do. But, the tape literally broke, and I had to call people to help give me, you know, back my contact numbers. So if you're traveling, if you just or in your purse, keep it. If your phone crashes, your phone gets stolen, your computer crashes, electricity. You know, people live in areas where there are tornadoes, earthquakes, floods, whatever. Have your backup list of phone numbers. You know, and you can have your favorite person. Well, I like persons A, B, and C for work-related stress problems. Persons D, E, and F have family issues like I do. People over here can't do a certain abstinent food. I understand that one. So maybe have like your list of, okay, who do I go to for this issue? And that is a really great tool to have. You know, and so the other thing I'd like to talk about, meetings. It says three meetings a week. It doesn't say we have to do three. It doesn't say we need to do more. I do more. I love my face-to-face meeting, my home meeting. I see my sponsor there. I see some of my sponsees there. But I really love the phone bridge, and I do. But this is just me. I double up on phone bridge. I do a meeting a day, and sometimes I do more than that, if I can, because I can. What does the big book talk about? What did Bill W. do? How did he start our father program? he was sober and he needed another drunk to speak to. Didn't matter if the guy was drunk or sober. He just needed another drunk to relate to keep him sober. So, and that's why, you know, I've heard this before. There's some people who actually get up to a face-to-face meeting and say defiantly, practically, I don't make outreach calls. And so what? I'm thinking, wow, you're really missing out on what this program is about. The contact with another addict. You know, it reminds me, see, when I'm working with others, it reminds me of who I was, who I am, and how I got here, and how I suffered, and how I don't want to suffer again. And if I don't give it away, I can't keep it. So I'll tell you a minute about my emotional slip. So I had gotten very ill with strep throat, and it was a couple of weeks, and 3 weeks. And my doctor said, you know, you're well enough, because, you know, there's a minute. Oh, boy, I got to finish up. You know, you can, the mentality is if you think you're sick, you're going to stay sick. So I hosted a housewarming party for a friend. And everybody brought sugary desserts. And 3 or 4 people were diabetics. And it was really funny because there was sweetener, you know, artificial sweetener for the coffee. And they, oh, yeah, they went for that. And then they had 2, 3, 4 pieces of whatever. And I just could not take it. I didn't eat, but I did not excuse myself to make those calls. I did not do it. And I left there with a fever again. And I was ill for probably another month and a half. But it taught me. I did not take care of myself. And you have to do that. You really do. And I gained 20 pounds over the next month. My food plan was the same. But I had this tremendous emotional slip of not taking care of myself by making that call. I should have excused myself to pray, a moment of meditation, and my emergency outreach call. And I didn't do it. And it was just like I got back into, oh, my God, these people are killing themselves. I can't take it. But I did not have it within me that day to excuse myself and separate and detach. So, you know, that was at least 20 pounds, like at least. I probably gained more. I told my doctor I didn't want to know. I had to give up an abstinent food that I still don't have today, but little by little, I started to lose weight again. When I got to the point of, it isn't God's time, not my time, because if it were my time, I would have lost all my weight in the first few months, and even though I know I belong here for life, it would have been very easy for me to say, I've taken care of my mother, I have a lot of issues, I'll see you in a couple of years. So I'm still here today. It doesn't mean that I don't have the thought, because after my mother died, I suffered the normal grieving depression, and I had the thought of something, and I had, what was my, you can know, you can have the first thought. It's the second thought and the first action. So my second thought was, I'm going to get up, I'm going to make a phone call, I'm going to be of service. I do shopping for a friend. I went shopping. I bought his junk food and his regular food. I bought my abstinent food. I got out of myself and out of my depression. So I say to you, it is only for today, not tomorrow. You know, I heard this on a meeting. You cannot drive your car looking in the rearview mirror. You can't. And that's not my idea. It was someone else's, but, yes, we look at the past to learn from it. So what, and you know, I say to a sponsee, what have you learned from this? That's why we need to look at the past, not to beat ourselves up, not to be full of regrets, but what can we learn? So it's just for today. For today I weigh and measure. For today I make my phone, and I'm not perfect. By the way, I said I've been abstinent 9 years. I lost 65 pounds. I need to lose more, and it isn't God's time, not my time. And I sponsor 8 people, 7 women and 1 man. Why? Because I can right now. Because I need to remember who I am, and I am a compulsive eater. So if you're looking, there is no magic bullet. We do need to make the calls. We need to make the meetings. I heard someone also say at a meeting, I've been sick for 3 weeks. I haven't done any meetings. And I thought, you know, that's why there is a phone bridge. You could be dying in your hospital bed. There is someone who's in a nursing home. She does her meetings. She must do 6 meetings a day. As my mom was dying, I was doing the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting every day with her. I needed that. I really did. So there is no excuse of I can't do a meeting. There are meetings, you know, it's too hard. I don't have time. How much time have you guys spent in our disease? Going to the store, buying the things, and then eating from restaurant to restaurant, hiding the wrappers. How much time did you spend after the binge feeling miserable and beating yourself up? When you take that all away, there is time to do this program. They said to their sponsor, I'm an adult. I don't need to be doing these things. And he said, you're right. It is your choice. But we accept these as requirements. And if you want what we have, you will do the 7 tools. So that's what I have for you. Just for today, I am a compulsive eater. Just for today, I will work the program, not perfectly, because I sometimes don't get everything done. But I work it to the best of my ability, and I am willing. Don't ask why, ask how. And always be loving. We need to love ourselves and each other so much more. So be kind and be loving. Make the outreach calls. Get to the meetings. If you can't get to face-to-face, there's Homebridge. Expand your horizons. All right? So now we're going to open up to questions. I'd like to thank you, everybody. We're going to open it up for questions. And I also would like to say, please remember to make your little notebooks. It really, really is a vital tool. And for you techies, you can do it on a CD, burn it on a CD, keep it someplace safe, or an SD card. But in reality, if the electricity goes out, of course there are battery-operated CD players. But I keep a little notebook full of information. Now, if you'd like to ask a question, please come up to the front. You have to speak on the microphone, and you have to sign the form for the release. Who would like to ask a question?
Okay, over there.
There's a microphone set up for the Q&A.
Okay. Can you sign this, please?
Sure. And please give us your name.
Hi, I'm Dawn.
Hi, Dawn. You have to speak into the microphone. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Dawn.
We can't hear you. One moment, please. Use this in the meantime.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm Dawn. And this is a microphone. Okay. My question is this. The program, I love what you said. Don't ask why, ask how. My problem is a fear of... When you have a slip and then you tell your sponsor, and then, like, if you have 3 slips and then your sponsor, it feels like they get rid of you. I have a fear of abandonment. My situation is I went 6 months perfect, and my sponsor's husband died, and so I lost my sponsor overnight. Then I got a sponsor on Phonebridge, and then I started having slips because it's like, it's not my sponsor. You know, I get this fear of abandonment and attachment, and then I had to work with this lady who was the sweetest little thing, but then she was slipping too, but she didn't tell me that. For 2 years, she'd been slipping, so we were both slipping. Anyway, what do you do about this whole punitive measure of, you know, the food thing, and you slip, and now you're bad, and I'm no longer going to have a relationship with you? How do you do that?
I'm going to answer first. I'm going to let someone else answer too. First of all, I've never fired a sponsee. That is an individual decision. If you are, you know, it is not a moral decision. I mean, this is not a moral issue that we are compulsive eaters. It's not. Okay? If you're willing to work it, I'll work with you. But, it, you know, what does the how stand for? Honesty, openness, and willingness. I do ask that my sponsees be honest, and I'm brutally honest with them, and I expect my sponsor to be honest with me. So perhaps you need to get a new sponsor. I don't know. But you keep working it, and you have to work all of the tools, especially if you're slipping. You may have to, in fact, I would say, double up on your meetings. And I'm going to let someone else answer.
I would like to address that. I was such a constant slipper that I feel I would never abandon anyone. I know what that feels like. And usually if the relationship is ended, it's ended by the one that's slipping because they just can't. My philosophy is this. I used to wait for the first of the month, Monday morning. It had to be all kinds of criteria. And now I realize whenever you come to, it can be Friday at 4 o'clock. You can start your abstinence then. We're all on day one when we wake up in the morning. You know, we're having this workshop, and those of you that say, oh, how did they put this together? I came in the program 38 years ago. I have 15 years. That doesn't mean that I was slipping all that other time. I had periods of abstinence, and that is just the hardest thing because I knew the difference. So when you have a long period of abstinence and you go back, you realize how devastating it is. I would never throw anyone away because I didn't want to be thrown away. As long as you have a sliver, a little sliver of hope, you can come back. You can come back again. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter how far you've sunk with the food, because I just thought that I was beyond repair. I had been on maintenance. I was sponsoring. I was leading meetings. I was leading retreats. And then I gained all my weight back. You know, that was so humiliating. I had to let go of my ego. I had to let go of everything that I thought that I knew. And you know what happens? When you've had periods of abstinence and you've gone out and then you get abstinent again, all is not lost. You don't start at day one. The truth of the matter is all that information, that good information, starts filtering back, and all of a sudden you're reading the big book, you're reading the 12 steps, and you understand the words. And anyone that's struggling in this room, you can have it again. Do not give up on yourself.
Hi. I wanted to speak to the issue about a sponsor that may make you feel wrong or ashamed or feel punitive. My advice would be to find another sponsor. We're all in the same boat together. We're all compulsive eaters. We've all struggled with slipping. And if there's any place in the world where we should be able to find understanding and compassion and support, it's here. And so don't, you know, and we're all imperfect humans. So, you know, not every sponsor is going to be able to be, you know, accepting and loving and supportive and understanding when you slip. And instead of making any kind of judgments, really helping you to get back on track, really guiding you to do the things you need to do to get back on track and supporting you in that. And so I would never, ever, ever think of firing a sponsee for slipping. The only time I have ever let go of a sponsee is, you know, we have a time that they call me every day, and that time is theirs. I'm 100% there. If somebody is just not calling, you know, and is breaking that commitment over a period of time, you know, I may ask them to find another sponsor, but never, ever for slipping. And so what I would suggest is if that's been an issue for you, and I had a problem when I was first in program, my first sponsor slipped and left the program. And then I had a succession of sponsors that were losing their abstinence. And that's when I started slipping and sliding. And so what I did this time around, and I thank God, I really paid attention to people that were leading meetings and people that were sharing and people that really got it, that really had solid recovery. You knew it by looking at them and hearing them, and you could tell, like, how they were living their lives. And I picked a sponsor that I knew would be there for me, that had a strong abstinence, that wouldn't judge me, that would be honest with me, and that if I was ever struggling, would support me and be there for me every step of the way. The only way I would leave a sponsor is for two reasons. If they were slipping and sliding a lot, or if they weren't completely supportive and looking for ways to guide me and help me if I was struggling with my abstinence.
Hi, my name is Laurel, and I'm a compulsive eater. And I want to address this to either Marilyn or Gabby, whoever can be supportive or has an open mind. Okay, I've received a lot. I've been coming to CHOW for about over a year now. I've had about a 57-pound weight release and gained 10 of it back over some nutritional issues that I was dealing with. And for the whole time I was losing weight, I had wine. I would have wine on a regular basis, you know, once a week, couple times a week, whatever. And I found out 3 months into the program that alcohol is not allowed in this program. I'm like, I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I'm willing to let go of the sugar and flour, but this is just like, come on, this is ridiculous. And I feel extremely resentful about it. I want to be in HOW, but I also want to have, I want to be able to live my life. I'm not an alcoholic, and I didn't sign up for no alcohol. So I would love to hear somebody's experience, strength, and hope in a non-judgmental way. Thank you.
I would like to address this only because I have had experience with this. I was going to give it to Gabby, but here I am. The truth of the matter is I made my fruit the wine, and it doesn't work. And you know why it doesn't work? Because wine has sugar in it. It sets up cravings for more of the same. There is no way to be abstinent and drink alcohol. I love wine. I used to love wine. I love my life more. I value my abstinence. I could not stay abstinent and drink wine. That's the bottom line. The truth of the matter is, I'm high on life, and that's the truth. I don't need to drink wine today. I was so excited to come here. It's my natal birthday. My family wanted to be with me. They actually want to be with me. And I chose to be with you because you're my family. I would have no life. So my family is celebrating tomorrow, but I could not stay abstinent, truthfully, if I had wine.
Good morning. My name is Claudette, and I am a grateful, recovering, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Claudette.
Hi. And my question is this. Being a sponsor, well, I have a wonderful sponsor, I have to tell you that. But trying to sponsor people that are manipulating the food plan, saying that I'm on a medical abstinence with no medical anything to show you, how do you handle that? I mean, you want to work with whoever is attracted to you. They say you have something they have, but that they want. But when they have all these issues around food and keep trying to get you to agree with them, what do you do? Pull you. I don't know.
And Claudette, who would you like to address this question to?
Whomever.
Me. All right. I'm Gabby. I'm a compulsive eater, and I'm so excited to meet Claudette in person because we talk all the time on the phone bridge, so that is fabulous. you know, you talked about dropping sponsees for slipping, and you heard three people up here say, I would never do it. And I have to tell you, in 15 years, almost 15 years, God willing, 15 years, I've asked one person to find another sponsor. Because if you're slipping but you're still calling, you know, and sometimes I say, you know, do you think I'm giving you what you need to hear? But the one person that I did say, I think that I can only sponsor the way that I am sponsored, was somebody who, you know, was calling her nutritionist every day and coming back with something new. And I said, I don't care what your food plan looks like. Why don't you pick one and stick with it for 30 days? Because it's not about the food. Let me be really, really clear. I have sponsee. I have five sponsees. I would love to find a total of how many people we all sponsor. I have five sponsees. Every single one of them eats something different. Eats a different food plan. And I'm going to go to the workshop later called, like, Getting Older in this program, because I started this program. I was 27. I was out dancing every Thursday night. I went out dancing. I went out dancing every weekend. I ate a lot of food my first couple years in maintenance. I'm now 41 in a couple weeks. Not so much anymore. Yeah, it turns out. Look at that. You lose food. Yeah, that's been my experience. So I have sponsees. Virtually all my sponsees eat more than I do. Sorry, guys. Maintenance, not necessarily what you want it to be. That being said, I know it's not about the food. I don't care what your food plan looks like. But the HOW program says you stick with your food plan and you need a medical thing. And I just very much saw that this was a way, you know, that she was finding solace, or I assumed that this is what the problem, you know, that it was about solace in the food. If I just change one more thing, then I'll be satisfied. Then that hole will be filled. Then I will get this, that, and the other thing. And that being said, I find that my best line ever with sponsees is, I can only sponsor the way I am sponsored. I'm not going to ask you to do anything I don't do. But if I tell you that I think it would help you to write, what I actually mean is you need to write. I once heard somebody say sponsorship is about bayoneting the wounded. And I find that to be a very good way to, you know, you gotta goose them. But if I say go to three meetings a week, it's because I go to three meetings a week. If I say, you know, go to make outreach calls, it's because I make outreach calls. If I say you got to do your writing, it's because you got to do your writing. And if I say you got to pick a food plan and stick to it, it's not because I'm a beast. I wish it was. It'd be very easy to say, just, you know, and I say, it's fine, you can hate me. But this, you know, the truth is, I really am telling you that this is what I think will work. And if you, you know, I hate to sound egotistical, but if you want what I have, you got to do what I do. And I don't have, you know, I don't have a magic bullet. But if you can say, I'm sorry, I can only sponsor the way that I am sponsored. And my sponsor, you know, says you must have a signed food plan. And I don't know where people are finding these people, because I have to tell you, I went to when I got pregnant, I went to my obstetrician and I brought my food plan so I could say, this is what I'm planning to eat. This is what they say to do when you're pregnant. Is this okay? Can you sign off on it? And, you know, he was like, I don't even want to look at that. Yeah, yeah, whatever. It's fine. Come back to me in a month and we'll see if you've gained the right amount of weight, more weight, less weight, whatever. And then we'll talk. And I'm like, I don't work like that, you know, but. So I'm not sure where people are finding people who are like, let me see that food plan. Let me read every drop of what's on this food plan. Let me sign off on this and, oh, this is not enough or this is too much. Because I have not found that doctor yet. So that would be my advice, is just to use that line. This is the way that I'm sponsored. And if you'd like, I'm sure there are other people who will sponsor you, but I can't sponsor in that way. That doesn't work for me. Outreach calls, that's actually a good way to make outreach calls. It's because you're like, okay, I have to call these people back. But feel free to call me. I'd love to hear from you.
After a moment of silence, Carol is going to read a vision for you, and we'll finish with a serenity prayer.
Carol, compulsive eater. This is a vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
One last thing. Remember to study those big books like the text is supposed to be studied, okay? Don't forget about the big book. All right. After a moment of silence for those who are still suffering in and outside of the rooms, please join us in a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done.